You're listening to a podcast from the Columbia Journalism Review. I'm Clint Hendler. Today, my guests are Leonard Downey and Michael Schutzen. From 1991 to 2008, Len Downey served as managing editor of the Washington Post, where he is now vice president at large. Schutzen is a professor of communication at the Columbia School of Journalism and is the author of many books on American media, culture, and politics. Today, we'll be talking about their new report, The Reconstruction of American Journalism. It discusses the state of a troubled news media at a time when financial and technical pressures are stressing the newspaper and television industries that have traditionally provided public service and accountability to journalism. The report will be excerpted in the November-December issue of the Columbia Journalism Review. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
I was hoping that you could start by explaining what your mission was when you decided to write this report.
Dick Lemon, the dean of the School of Journalism here at Columbia University, was aware of the fact that there are a lot of studies going on about the cataclysmic changes going on in the news media right now. And he was interested in one that would be based on reporting, good old-fashioned reporting. Engaged myself and Michael, put us together as a team to do that reporting around the country and to come up with conclusions about what's going on, what might be happening in the future, and what we would recommend ought to be done to have the best things happen in the future.
Backgrounding the report is obviously the cataclysmic changes, as you said, in the news industry. Michael, I know we could spend all day talking about this one question, but why has the market broken down, in your view, as a method of supporting accountability journalism?
Newspapers in particular had been losing their audience for some time, but managing that perfectly well. What changed is the internet, the move of news to a wide audience for free. At the same time, it was even more than the audience moving online. It was advertising moving online. Classified ads had become more and more the mainstay of the daily newspaper. And Craigslist and other sources of advertising your household goods or your automobiles or real estate went online, and it was devastating, has been, it's still devastating to the newspapers. At the same time, the newspapers, focusing on them, had expanded and taken on huge debt as they bought other papers and other businesses because newspapers were doing quite well and still making money into the early 2000s. They didn't respond quickly enough to see what was coming around the corner.
Len, you mentioned that one thing that set your report apart from a lot of other looks at this question was that you tried to do a lot of reporting on what is happening out there.
Right.
Your report closes on an optimistic note, saying that you think you've seen the beginnings of a genuine reconstruction of what journalism can and should be. I was hoping you could tell us what you've seen out there. What green shoots are out there that give you optimism?
Well, first of all, the old trees are not dying completely. Newspapers will be with us, Michael and I have concluded. They're changing dramatically. They're adapting themselves to the digital age. But they will be much smaller because a lot of the advertising income they've lost will not come back. So they're reorganizing themselves as smaller institutions. But they still will employ thousands of journalists around the country. But at the same time, growing up all around the country in many communities are new forms of news gathering, and mostly online. Some of them are community news organizations like Voice of San Diego in San Diego, Min Post in Minneapolis, St. Louis Beacon in St. Louis, that have maybe a dozen reporters each, and they focus on accountability journalism, to use your term earlier, which is the kind of local reporting that holds institutions and people with power accountable to the people in the community. That's what they focus on. They're not doing sports. They're not doing movies. They're not doing a lot of other things that newspapers have to do. In addition, there are journalists who've left newspaper newsrooms who've started up investigative reporting projects, most of those located at universities around the country. And then there are universities like Columbia University that are doing their own local reporting in neighborhoods for websites, neighborhood websites that Columbia organizes. And that's going on in a variety of universities around the country. And then in addition to that, there are many, many, we were surprised by how many neighborhood news organizations, blogs, if you will, in neighborhoods around the country, particularly in cities like Seattle that are very internet-oriented. Almost every neighborhood has its own neighborhood blog run by a professional journalist using citizens as contributors. And they're trying to make businesses out of these things. So there are all these new kinds of news organizations springing up around the country, creating new competition with newspapers in places where newspapers had been the only source of local news reporting, and in some cases collaborating with those newspapers.
It seems like you're describing a wide range of organizations, the nonprofits, university incubated organizations, smaller for-profit ventures. Your report concludes by laying out six steps that you would encourage governments and other large institutions to take in order to nurture and support a lot of these new upstarts. Given that there's already been so much innovation around this question, why are you concerned that the market alone, without these steps, won't carry the weight? Michael?
Our concern is that the kind of journalism that we're most interested to save, accountability journalism, has always been expensive. If you're the movie reviewer, it's the cost of a ticket to the movie, and then you sit down and write your thoughts. But investigative reporting may take weeks or months or years, in fact. It requires a budget. It requires an organization that has the weight to back it up. And as the newspapers, again, as Len said, most of them, the vast majority of them, are surviving. But they're surviving in a reduced state. Sometimes their newsrooms are down 50% of what they were 5 years ago. That's something that is not ultimately going to come back. The 200 reporters they've let go are not going to be rehired as soon as the economy turns around. So it seems to us that this essential function for our democracy of accountability journalism has to be adopted by other institutions and by the society as a whole, now that the legacy institutions, the daily metropolitan newspapers, can't do it all themselves. They can do a lot, they can change, they can adapt, but they're not going to do 95% of it that they once did. But we have to find other sources.
And these new shoots are exactly that. They're fledgling. They're fragile. They're dependent on foundation grants, initial foundation grants to help set them up. They're dependent on a little bit of advertising they can scrounge up in their communities because they're new players in that game and they have small audiences, so they're not that attractive to big advertisers. And they're dependent on donations from people like public radio and broadcasting have long had. And as a result, there's no certainty that they're going to survive if they don't get help. And that's why we're talking in this report about providing them help. And also, I just mentioned public broadcasting is a good example because it's been around now for a very long time. And with relatively few notable exceptions around the country, most public radio stations and nearly all public television stations do almost no local reporting, which was shocking to us when we discovered that. We think that needs to be fixed. Because it's expensive and they're spending their money on other things, that it's difficult to spend the money on local reporting. So we're recommending, among other things, that foundations step up their support for this kind of journalism, that the public media be reorganized so that it is imperative that public radio and television stations do local reporting and have the financial support to do it. And we're recommending that a new fund for local news be set up with money from the kinds of things that the Federal Communications Commission already collects, things like station licenses and the sale of spectrum to broadcasters. It's a lot of money. So it's just some of that money went into this fund for local news that would be administered in a competitive way for the best innovative ideas for local news coverage, particularly by these startups, but it can also be by established news institutions. These things are needed. Society needs to step up where the marketplace is no longer supporting sufficient local reporting.
I'd like to get into your proposals sort of one by one in mm-hmm. more specific detail, but let's go ahead and start with the Fund for Local News since you just brought it up. As you said, the idea would be for the FCC to capture some revenue stream and parcel it out in a way similar to the National Endowments for the Arts or Humanities. Could you explain what monies are available for that sort of project that the FCC could collect, and also what sort of procedure you envision in local and regional bodies to divvy it up, and what criteria would be available, who would be making these decisions?
The FCC already, for instance, on your phone bill, there's a surcharge on your phone bill that the government's been collecting for a long time and distributing it for public purposes. It goes to wire schools, for example, wire schools and libraries for the internet, probably most of which is done. It goes to make sure that rural areas get broadband coverage and other kinds of telecommunication coverage. They also obviously bring in money for the licensing of stations. They bring in money when they sell the public spectrum to people like cell phones. telephone operators. These are large amounts of monies in the billions of dollars, and some of them already go to public purposes. Congress has decided they ought to go to certain public purposes. So we're recommending that an additional public purpose for this money, which is already being collected, be local news coverage. And that we set up a system that would so make sure this is done by merit, that it's not politically influenced. You'd have to have a separate fund for local news council. Michael envisioned having state councils that would then work under the national council. Appointees would be people in journalism and in public affairs, not political appointments. The applications would be judged on their journalistic merit, on their innovation, on the ability of the news organization to carry out what they propose to do, and then they'd be awarded grants. We would think on like a 3-year basis so that you've got enough time to make this thing work and that it would be potentially renewable for local news coverage that ought to be funded this way.
Do you envision that people would go with a specific project in mind, we're interested in covering the sewers in our town, or would go more with the idea of we're interested in launching a website that would look at these broad categories of societies, organizational support or project support?
We're thinking more of organizational support. Again, these organizations, the new ones, the Green Shoots, are small, and they're looking for money like lots of nonprofits do day to day, you know, $5,000 here and $10,000 there. They can't plan ahead that way. And with this fund, it would have substantial enough money so that a 3-year commitment renewable would be a great advantage for them. They may come in with particular projects, but I would hope that the emphasis would be on more basic support for them.
Right. And
we're looking for streams of coverage as opposed to a particular project about a problem with sewers in a particular town. The notion that sewers and waters and housing would be regularly covered by these two reporters over a period of time is the sort of thing we're thinking about, streams of coverage.
Okay. This would be a new method for, you know, essentially tax revenue, government revenue, to be used in support of journalism. And that's often been a line that journalists and other people, you know, thinking about this question, have been pretty wary to cross. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting enters into your proposals in a different area, but obviously that's a board that has had some troubles with politicization in the past and has been used to support journalism and public affairs programming. What has caused you to rethink that traditional hesitation? Is it merely that you think you've invented a better wheel, you know, a better way of insulating those decisions?
No, it's not that, but it's recognizing that we and other democracies, but our own democracy, to have found ways to insulate. There have been problems at the NEA and the NEH with political pressure. At the same time, they've been with us for decades now, and you don't hear about those problems on a daily basis. We don't even think most of the time about the National Science Foundation, the National Institutes of Health, which are multi-billion-dollar enterprises that they hand out to knowledge makers, knowledge creators. It's not like science is not controversial. There's lots in science that's controversial, and social science that they also provide monies for. Mostly, it works. I think we concentrate so much on the visible and troubling incidents where they fail to work, but the various mechanisms of panels of peer review and decentralization to state humanities councils and so forth work reasonably well. You know, the details would always be difficult to work out, but mostly we've managed to do it. And just a sort of historical note, the government has been subsidizing the news media since 1792 in giving newspapers privileged access to the post office, cheaper rates for postage. And in those days, newspapers circulated primarily through the post. The founding fathers wanted wide circulation of information, and they were willing to put some dollars behind it.
To look at it another way, advertising has been subsidizing news coverage for a very long time. And, of course, there have been incidents where an individual advertiser's tried to influence the news. There have been scandals over it. But the preponderance of news coverage has been unaffected by advertising, in part because there are so many different advertisers. No one advertiser has that much sway, but also because news organizations and the people who read newspapers did not want to be seen as being influenced by advertisers. So I think you have the same sort of built-in public protections, if you will, as long as the mechanism works fairly well. As Michael said, they're bound to be some controversies and some problems. There are with any kind of support of news because news is by its nature raises controversy. But we think that a workable system can be worked out.
One sort of quieter proposal you have for a way that government could help sustain these upstarts and perhaps launch new ones would be to make modifications in the tax code. You talk about something called LC3 corporations. You also speak about making it clearer that news organizations would be explicitly authorized to incorporate as nonprofits. Could you speak about what in the tax code is currently causing hiccups and what you'd like to see change?
Again, this would not be a dramatic departure from what's going on now. There are a number of these smaller news organizations are already nonprofits. And of course, so are universities, which are running some of these news organizations as well. But what happens is that each individual startup, like the Voice of San Diego, for example, a community online news organization in San Diego that's been very good, has to apply to the IRS and see if they're going to get a letter enabling them to become what's called a 501c3 nonprofit, which means that the money that's given to them is tax deductible for donors, which makes it attractive to give money to them. And of course, their own any money that they make beyond their expenses is not regarded as a taxable profit, but goes back into the business, which is what's essential for them to keep going. You know, each individual organization has to get its own individual letter saying, okay, you can be a 501c3. Going into it, they don't know if they're going to qualify or not. And coming out of it, they don't know if they're going to be able to keep it depending upon how much advertising revenue do they raise, for example. How much do they begin to look like a commercial organization? Will that get them in trouble with the IRS? Because they're a 501c3, they know they can't endorse candidates in elections, but can they have editorial opinions about what's going on in politics? Can they have editorial opinions about the health care bill or something like that? They're not sure because the IRS has never spelled out exactly what these guidelines are. There are a number of different kinds of social functions that are spelled out in the 501c3 rules, like religious organizations in amateur sports, for example, but news organizations are not among them. So the IRS has been doing it one at a time. What we're saying is, let's categorically say news organizations that act in the public interest can be 501c3s, period. So everybody knows that. And that would mean also you could convert a newspaper into one if that were possible. We don't see a whole lot of newspapers becoming nonprofits. I mean, some of them are nonprofits now because they're losing money. But becoming an active, viable nonprofit would be very difficult for a large newspaper. But it should be something available to owners who may want to do that in the public interest.
And it might be easier for smaller upstarts to take advantage of it.
Right.
It might not necessarily be newspapers who'd be taking advantage of it.
Yes, exactly. So the tax experts we've talked to during our research have said that they believe it's even possible for the IRS itself to simply change its rules in a way, not even change its rules, but spell out its rules.
So it might not necessarily take an act of Congress.
So it may not necessarily take an act of Congress, or it could take an act of Congress. We're saying Congress, IRS, whichever one needs to do this, somebody ought to do it, and it's not a big departure from current practice.
Let's go back briefly to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Something I learned in reading your report was that apparently this has been a question that the CPB has been thinking a lot about, that there have been some reports internally looking at the question of local news coverage. Could you describe what those reports have found, what their goals are, and to what extent there's been any movement in that direction?
The Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which is the government-financed independent entity that doles out the money that the government provides to public broadcasting. And then that money is augmented by donations, private donations, foundations, et cetera. So for each individual station, it's a fraction of their total income. That's one organization involved here. The other is Public Broadcasting System, which is not like a television network. It does not produce programming itself. It's a conduit for programming produced by others that then goes on to public broadcasting stations. like Masterpiece Theater and the Lear Report and so on. And then there's National Public Radio, which is a news organization that provides national and international news to local stations around the country who are its members. But they have to do their own local reporting if they're going to do any at all. NPR doesn't do that. So those three organizations realize there's a crisis going on in American journalism. And they realize that as public broadcasting, they have a responsibility to do something about it. That's dawning on them. But they're responding in different ways. CPB is an organization that moves incrementally. So they're financing a few experiments in local news gathering by local public radio stations. And they've commissioned this internal report about the future of public radio in which one of the top priorities is to greatly increase local news reporting. And they acknowledge in this report that there's very little of it going on now and that that's wrong and that stations need to be providing reporters boots on the ground, as they say in the report, to be doing this kind of local reporting. They don't specifically say exactly how it's going to happen.
And who's going to pay for it.
And who's going to pay for it. At the same time, NPR wants to help its member stations improve its local reporting. It's got some money, obviously, and it's got relationships with these stations. And it has just built a new website of its own and a kind of an internet method for sharing information amongst all the stations and with NPR. And so they're working with stations to try to do some investigative reporting to help stations increase their local reporting in areas like environmental things, education, and so on, where they can share information with each other. But again, this is still, at the moment, involves a small number of stations. And then PBS has commissioned a report that we still haven't seen the light of day yet, but we've talked to people involved with it, try to figure out what should public television's role be in journalism. So far, it sounds like its focus is mostly national, which I think would be a shame, because we have plenty of national news, and we have all these national documentaries on PBS. What we think public television stations ought to be focusing on now is beginning to do some local news reporting, which they're not doing. So that's why we recommend in this report that the CPB tell the stations from whom it gets money that if you're going to continue to get money from us, you're going to have to provide a certain level of local news reporting. That would be a big culture change for CPB, which doesn't like laying down mandates like that. But we think it's time to do it. And if CPB can't do it on its own, we think Congress ought to tell it to do it.
It's worth adding that though each of these are different organizations, that increasingly the different types of news organizations are working with one another. A lot of these startups are nonprofit online organizations, but they're providing news also to a local commercial television station, a local national public radio station. They are, oddly enough, they have hardly any money or personnel themselves, but they're subsidizing commercial and public media in providing the actual faces, voices based on their own reporting. So it's really a remarkable time when across media there's all kinds of blurring, sharing, cooperation that is just making a real difference.
So that's a very important point because I remember from all my days in newspaper journalism that we were highly competitive, and if it wasn't invented here, we by and large weren't going to get engaged in it. We wanted to do our own reporting and not work with other people. Now newspapers across the country, forced by economic circumstances and smaller staffs, are working together. The eight largest newspapers in Ohio are sharing all of their news reporting with each other now, for example, which enables them to use their local staffs for more local enterprise reporting. And to go to Michael's point, it just was announced that a very wealthy man in San Francisco has donated $5 million to a new local news startup there that will be a combination of School of Journalism at the University of California at Berkeley and the local public radio and television stations in San Francisco, KQED, to start up a new local coverage website that will be able to provide news for those public television stations and for any other news organizations that want to make use of that news. That's the kind of thing that we want to help encourage.
And I think I remember from your report, it's even possible that the New York Times might take advantage of some of that reporting in a local edition, in a zone San Francisco
yes,
edition.
Yes, there are negotiations going on for whether or not the Times would pay this new organization to have local San Francisco coverage to go into an edition they're already starting of the New York Times out there. They'll have a couple pages of local news in it, which the Times itself will provide. They want to subcontract that business to somebody else.
So there we have a for-profit entity taking advantage of reporting that's being produced.
Exactly. Well, and ProPublica, which is a national investigative reporting project, started in New York by the former managing editor of the Wall Street Journal with a very large donation from a California couple, has a fairly large newsroom with about 36 people all told. And it provides investigative reporting for free, because that's the stipulation as a 501c3 organization, to news organizations around the country. So the New York Times and the Washington Post, for instance, have each published a number of front page stories produced either entirely by ProPublica reporters or by collaborations of ProPublica reporters and reporters for those newspapers.
Right. The San Francisco model is also an example of something else that you praise in your report, which is increased involvement by universities, journalism schools, and communication departments. And of course, you know, there are hundreds of journalism schools and departments and communications departments across the country. And Michael, you work in one. But what more would you like to see the Academy do to address the growing news gap?
The main thing we talk about in the report is, as one of the people we interviewed says, that journalism school students can learn their journalism using live ammunition. They can be reporting for public news media under the guidance of experienced journalists who are their teachers or working with their teachers. Again, this is something easy enough to recommend because they're already doing it. They're doing it at Missouri, and they're doing it at Northwestern, and at Berkeley, and at Columbia, and at Arizona State, and many other places are moving in that direction. It hasn't been the dominant mode in journalism schools, but it increasingly recognized that, you know, we can do this. It's exciting for the students. It provides a new kind of, you know, I'm not just doing a class assignment. This is real reporting. Someone's going to, my God, read it or see it. What it takes to implement this further is simply the recognition that it's happening, that it's part of a kind of movement in education. It'll need additional financial support for sure, but it's something that's already here on the ground.
And it's one of the ways in which the digital revolution is actually making better journalism possible.
Yes.
The focus up until now has been on the destruction of, for instance, the old newspaper economic models by the internet. But in fact, the internet has now has reduced the cost of doing journalism very, very low in terms of being able to disseminate journalism. So this makes it possible for universities to not have to provide paper and delivery and printing presses and so on. You can do what Columbia's been doing. You can set up neighborhood websites at relatively low overhead cost and focus your investment on the journalism itself.
Another proposal that you guys have set out in the report is encouraging foundations, both community foundations, but also the sort of national marquee name foundations, to get involved in more giving in this area. But the report identifies a sort of cultural barrier within foundations right now, which is that a lot of foundations tend to be, in some cases, you know, ideologically driven, but also subject matter driven and project and goal driven. That they expect to give money and get specific results. Could you talk more about the attitude adjustments that you'd like to see from foundations that would allow them to get more involved in supporting news on an ongoing basis?
That's an area where we still expect to learn something, because we're still talking with people at various foundations about this in an effort to learn more and encourage them to be thinking more about news organizations. But they are beginning to, and they're beginning to in no small measure because of the leadership at the Knight Foundation, which has been donating more than other foundations to news media and encouraging other foundations, notably the community foundations, to do the same. You know, foundations are responsible to their trustees, or in the case of community foundations, to their individual donors. To be responsible, they want to see results. They want to see some way of evaluating, assessing where their money goes and what it does for them. That seems entirely understandable. At the same time, it may take some tweaking of the way they think about things to say, well, yes, this three-year grant to a startup news organization is worth doing, even though you don't know what stories they're going to be working on. You don't know what the results of those stories are going to be for public policy or public officials. You're going to have to trust in the experience, expertise, track record of these organizations and know that in the long run, this is a good investment. You may have to relax, though. You know, in 6 months, we want to know exactly what you've done.
Overall, the question is one of resources. It's where is the funding going to come from now that the advertising model has been upended and to support this sort of journalism? You know, there are many worthy causes out there. There are lots of people with hands out, and it's easy to say that institutions like governments and foundations and wealthy individuals who have that money, it's easy to ask. But how optimistic are you that a case can be made, a winning case can be made, that this is where resources and money go? And how did journalists and others who are concerned about the state of the news industry go about making that case?
Particularly accountability journalism is vital to our democracy. Michael has authored sort of mini essay within the report itself that explains historically how important that's been to this democracy and to other Western democracies. And then we make the case that particularly local accountability is important to our democracy because we have a sprawling country out there. It's the American tradition. Journalism that holds government and others accountable makes a big difference in the way in which we govern ourselves and ways in which we live our daily lives. But it's also going to come about through demonstration of the journalism itself. I think that, you know, Voice of San Diego, which still is a relatively small budget of something a little over $1 million and a small staff of about a dozen or so journalists, is proving itself in San Diego. It is doing the kind of reporting that is not being done by the local newspaper there in some cases or by other news media there. So its funders, including a local foundation, the San Diego Foundation, can see it's making a difference in the community. And that makes it easier for them to support it and for others in the community to support it. And as we did our reporting elsewhere in the country where you do find support for these startups, the people that are supporting them say, we can see they're making a difference in our community. So to some extent, it's going to be arguing that we can make a difference, but it's also going to be showing through the journalism itself.
You can certainly find social science data that says news makes a difference, that communities that have good local media have congressmen who are more responsive to their constituents than communities without. And you know, that helps the case. At the same time, I think the individual examples we all know about from Watergate on are convincing in their own right. Voice of San Diego has been convincing to the locals there because it has found some local corruption that no one else in town had. Probably 7 or 8 reporters managed to do it on a budget of practically nothing. That kind of thing we see emerging everywhere. I reemphasize what Len already said, that the online environment makes it cheaper to do first-rate reporting. It makes it possible for an individual blogger, say, to do reporting, establish a reputation, get picked up in the mainstream media, and make a real difference in the world based on not just spouting opinions, although that's worthwhile in its own right, but actually providing new information about the local world.
And there are entrepreneurs who actually think this can be a going business, too. This is not all charity. For instance, a lot of these neighborhood blogs in places like Seattle, for example, have been started by journalists who hope to make their living doing this. A modest living, obviously. They're dedicated to their local reporting. But by working with citizens, using the cheapness of online publication, and sufficient in advertising interest because they are reaching a certain very involved audience. And in fact, again, to emphasize the optimism in this report, some of this journalism wasn't being done before. You know, for all the huge size of newspaper newsrooms, they weren't always able to reach, in fact, seldom able to reach down to the neighborhood level. That was not financially productive when you're printing all those huge newspapers distributing across the city. But it is feasible when you're in the online environment. So, for instance, in Seattle, one couple who still have other media jobs but hope to eventually make this their full-time job have 4 or 5 of these neighborhood blogs. Each one has a professional editor whom they've hired, and then they work with citizens and they provide a wealth of neighborhood news in each of these areas, which would not have been possible for a printed newspaper.
Well, I think we'll leave it there. Thank you very much, both. We've been talking about your new report, The Reconstruction of American Journalism, which will be available online and will be excerpted in a coming issue of the Columbia Journalism Review. So again, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Take care.